look forward to debating him and trying to figure out where he stands on issues.
Let me be absolutely clear. Our spouses and our children are off bounds. It is not acceptable for a big, loud New York bully to attack my wife.
Deciding in advance simply to turn your back before the president even names a nominee is not an option the Constitution leaves open.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday. Good Friday, March 25th, 2016. It's 5:09. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to talk about today. Four things that you need to do the first thing you get into work this morning. That's one of our discussions later on this half hour. We're also going to be talking about millennials. You know, we love to blame millennials for everything. And if you're above 40, they're apparently buying a lot of SUVs, and Ford's very happy. We'll talk with a Ford representative later in the broadcast, the New York Auto Show wrapping up. We'll tell you some of the highlights of that show as well as we move through the morning. It is a holiday. Lots of the markets are closed. Most of the markets are closed, including here in the United States for Good Friday. Yesterday on the markets, the Dow Jones Industrials ended the day up just about 13 points. The S&P was off just a fraction. The NASDAQ was up just a bit. Oil was trading at $39.59 a barrel, off about 20 cents. Again, on the global markets today, generally everything is off, at least on hold until the Good Friday holiday is over. We'll get more into the market intel as we move along this morning. But first, from the WGN Market Desk, here's your overnight global intel from around the world. There's a proxy fight going on at Yahoo. Activist investor Star Board has launched a proxy fight to oust Yahoo's entire board. The activist hedge fund wants to oust the board. They've named nominated nine directors, including a CEO, Jeffrey Smith. It remains to be seen how this is going to end up or where this is heading, but that's what's happening with Yahoo in tech stocks. The stocks, as we mentioned, were mostly mixed yesterday, closing down. They've ended their weekly winning streak. Stocks being shut down for the Easter weekend. The dollar climbed for the fifth straight session. Jack Albon of BMO, a private bank, says... all in all, it wasn't a bad day yesterday for the markets, but we'll wait and see is his attitude.
I think it's a little bit of profit taking. We had a nice surge that lasted several weeks, and you know we had some pretty supportive monetary policy, at least from abroad.
That's, again, Jack Albon of BMO Private Bank. It is one of our discussions this morning as we welcome in Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, portfolio manager there. Paul, good morning and happy Easter weekend.
Good morning and good Friday.
Well, you heard what little intel we have on the markets. It seems like everybody started taking a holiday midweek. As a matter of fact, I had to laugh. I was watching CNBC, and you know how they're always trying to fill time and air. And one of the analysts says to the other, "So how would you describe what's going on?" And the guy goes, "Well, I think we're in a bunny market.
It is hopping around a lot. It has been for the last 6 months or so."
Yeah, I guess his point too was that investors sort of like took off starting earlier this week. They saw the terrorist attack in Belgium, and they just sort of decided to lay low this week, right?
No, it's true. Volume did dry up. The volume for Wednesday and Thursday were the lowest for the year so far, since the Christmas holiday. So yeah, investors certainly have taken the holiday, and Europe is going to be closed on Monday as well, following it. So yeah, it's going to be a slow start.
Were you surprised that the markets didn't react worse, in a worse way to the attacks?
To be honest with you, each of the attacks that we've seen, starting with 9/11, the reaction has been less and less. So as sad as it is, investors are getting used to it. And so you don't discount a lot of the same type of information. So each of the attacks, as bad as they are from a personal level, from an investment perspective, a lot of investors are not paying attention to it.
This one in particular, just like the one at 9/11, happened near in a center of finance. You couldn't get anywhere bigger than Brussels for this. And it begs the question, is this something that we should not be getting used to and we should start really worrying more about?
I think so, because, again, you've got you, by their very nature, you don't know what's going to happen, where it's going to happen, how serious it's going to be, and we really don't politically around the world have a good handle on it. So it's going to be a surprise whenever it happens, and it potentially can be very, very serious.
There were a few stocks that took it on the head. A lot of the airline stocks initially were down considerably. Travel-related stocks like Expedia saw drops. Anything in portfolios that you manage that people were concerned about and pull out of?
No, not really. Again, that's part of a market that we really don't play around in. We're still pretty defensive in general. So the consumer stocks, they're doing fine. Technology, again, doing fine. There's not a lot of reaction to that part of the market.
Coming up, I'd like to talk about the Fed, what we heard from not only the Chicago Fed president this week, but the St. Louis Fed president, both of them talking about potential interest rate hikes. And what you as a consumer can start doing now, if you're not, to worry about your retirement, start saving for your retirement, and what portfolio things you need to be doing.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The stock market closed yesterday with its first weekly loss since mid-February. The Dow was up 13 points. The S&P 500 slipped a point. The NASDAQ inched up 4.5. Trading was relatively quiet ahead of the long weekend. U.S. markets are closed today for Good Friday. Other markets are open. Japanese stocks gained overnight on the prospect of a steady U.S. economic recovery. The Nikkei rose nearly 1%, while other Asian markets were mixed. More people did apply for unemployment aid last week, but applications are still consistent with steady job growth. The Labor Department says weekly applications for unemployment benefits rose 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 265,000. Goldman Sachs has told New York State regulators that it's expanding a plan to cut employees this year, up from 43 to now 109 workers potentially losing their jobs. Goldman Sachs is among the global investment banks that have been paring staff this year as market turmoil and stiffer regulations hurt their profits. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 520. We're on with Paul Nolce of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, portfolio advisor. Paul, the two dueling Fed presidents from the Midwest had... Had news conferences or speeches this week. The Chicago Federal Reserve Chairman says he expects, what, 2 to 2.5% growth this year, a further drop in the unemployment rate, maybe one more rate hike. And then the guy from St. Louis, he says maybe a rate hike as early as April.
As April, yeah. Again, this has been kind of the MO for the Fed. It hasn't really been a true split Fed, because when you go to the voting, they're all pretty much on the same page. But as soon as we get done with the Fed meeting, then they go out and about and travel the country and give their own speeches and their own opinions. So Bullard, the Fed chief down in St. Louis, is indicating, yes, the economy is strong enough to withstand rate hikes. And the thought, I think, that he's talking about is we need to hike rates now, normalize those rates so that when we get a recession, we can cut rates again. Which seems a little counterintuitive, having been through different QE policies ever since 2008 when we've been at zero interest rates. So I think they're trying to talk the markets and get the markets ready for a rate hike at some point.
And that's what I was going to ask. Are these guys charged with going out and floating these trial balloons?
I think so. You know, the comment has been that, you know, when Greenspan was in charge, we had the Greenspan put. So anytime the markets went down, you know, the Fed was going to be there and supporting the market. And I think what we have now is kind of a Yellen call, which means that when the markets go up and are quiet like they are now, the Fed thinks that they can raise rates because the markets are okay and can handle it. And we saw that in December when the markets quieted down after the fall decline. So, again, I think it working against the market is, you know, if it gets a little bit too far ahead of itself, the Fed will feel emboldened to raise rates.
I saw a lot more coverage of the Chicago Fed's comments than I did the St. Louis Fed chair's president's comments. Markets didn't react to either, really.
A little bit, but again, I think markets are getting, I don't want to say comfortable with their comments, but realize that the meeting is what matters. And certainly it's interesting to get the color and get a little bit more depth to the different viewpoints on the Fed, because they are certainly not of one voice.
So let's talk about retirement. Millennials these days, a lot of attention is being paid to this group of this generation of Americans, and whether or not they should be saving, whether or not they even have money to save. What is the best course of practice here for people to start in that age range to start thinking about it? Because they should be, right?
Oh, absolutely. The sooner you start, the better off you will be. So in talking to students and so on, when they get out into the workforce, the first thing, if available to you, is a 401k, absolutely. Many companies match, so you're already doubling your money, or it's up 50% because that's the match that you're getting. So you want to be able to contribute at least to the match level. And then as you get further along in your career, you get pay increases, you increase that percentage. So you just want to get into the habit of saving and realize that you really should be paying yourself first. But once you get into that habit, it makes it a lot easier. You don't miss the dollars.
I know after college, one of the things that I always heard was pay off your debt, then start saving. Is that still a good barometer, or should
it is,
we be doing
and it
both?
Depends on your debt. I mean, the discussion I have with a lot of my clients and really revolves around home debt. Home debt is actually a good debt because you have an asset behind it. You also get a tax deduction for it. The federal government's nice enough to do that. Maybe not necessarily so with other forms of debt, but generally speaking, you want to pay off your debt. If it's very, very low interest rates, 3-4%, maybe not. You know, car loan at zero, I wouldn't necessarily pay off because you could do better elsewhere.
If millennials are making very little money to begin with, and they don't have, you know, the one, I think, is there a minimum amount you can put into a 401k, or can you?
You can get started with very minimal, $25, $50, mm-hmm. Something like that. And again, because it's coming off pre-tax, for example, $50, doesn't mean your paycheck goes down by $50 because you're avoiding some of the taxes, et cetera. What you wind up with is a paycheck that goes down maybe $40 to $45, but you get a $50 benefit in your 401k.
And so let's talk about baby boomers, people who are getting closer to retirement. 2008, I know a lot of people after 2008 that said, you know what, I'm going to have to keep working for another 10 years. They were ready to retire, not so much.
What works for the millennials and works in the accumulation phase is that dollar cost averaging. You're buying on a regular basis. You actually like the market to go down. You can buy more shares. The reverse is true in retirement, where your starting point matters. So you really want to retire when the markets are lower and experience something just after 2009 where the markets were up 20% a year. So when you're starting retirement when the markets are expensive, it makes it difficult. It makes it that much more difficult to pull dollars out of retirement and have it last for your lifetime.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here because my mother, who is in her mid-70s, retired many years ago, and she has a part-time job now because her retirement's not getting her through. And I always joke with her that, Mom, I'm never going to be able to retire. Never, ever going to be able to retire. Is that, am I kidding myself when I think I'm going to be able to retire and I'm, you know, almost 50, so, you know, I'm saving, but I kind of have this feeling I'm going to be working till I die.
And it goes back to what we were just talking about with the millennials. And when you take a look at some of the earlier generations, they were much more frugal than our generation or those that have followed. They did save a lot more. The dynamic is different too, because we don't have pensions. My parents had pensions. They get that income along with Social Security. We're on our own. We have to create our own pensions, and that's that 401k. And certainly we're not putting enough away, or certainly enough that's going to allow us to get that type of income that we're looking for in retirement. So it is much, much harder now than it was for our parents.
And so let's transition into what you like. And I know you're one of the steady, steadfast, safe investment advisors. What should we be doing as we move into the next week?
Yeah, no, slow and steady definitely is going to be the MO going forward, because in our view, the markets are generally kind of expensive here. Bonds, even at low interest rates, make some sense. The consumer staples, technology stocks are very inexpensive here. Next week is going to be interesting because we'll get that unemployment report on Friday. We'll get a lot of the beginning of the month reports, and then we roll after that into earnings season. So April will be a lot of things to watch for the ADD group. It's going to be a wonderful month.
Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Always good of you to be with us on the opening bell. We're happy to have you, and hopefully the Easter Bunny will bring a nice big Easter basket full of profitable stocks and bonds.
Always looking forward to it. Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:38. Welcome back to the program. Before we get into our next segment, we have some breaking news just into the WGN newsroom. We've been monitoring a news conference in Belgium with the United States Secretary of State John Kerry and the Belgian Prime Minister. The Secretary of State has just confirmed that two Americans did die in the Brussels attacks this week. We had been hearing reports there may have been Americans. Now it is confirmed two Americans dead in the Brussels attacks earlier this week. We'll continue monitoring this story, obviously, throughout the morning here on WGNN in the Steve Cochran Show. Well, what is the first thing you do when you get to work? Do you walk around the office, gossip with your coworkers, get some coffee, go to the bathroom? What is it? What's your routine? Well, there are four things that you probably should be doing every day at work. Joining us on the Opening Bell this morning is writer Lana Lynn Gross, who's written about this for FastCompany.com. Lana, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me. What a great way to start the day.
Yeah, I know. So what do you do when you go to work, and what should we be doing when we first get to work?
Yeah, so the first thing, I know it's very counterintuitive, and you always think, you know, I'm going to get in, I'm going to check my email and start from there. Well, Mark Twain actually said that the first thing that you should do in the morning is, you know, metaphorically, eat a live frog so that you can go through the rest of the day knowing it can't get any worse. So that doesn't mean you have to switch your latte and a muffin for a frog. It just means you should do your most important task first because you have the most willpower in the morning. So harnessing your motivation then and using that motivation to get the task that you kind of want to do the least done first will actually make you more productive throughout the day.
That's pretty good advice, because if you expend, especially if you've had a sleepless night, I've heard that this is, you know, expend all of the important energy first. That seems pretty smart. So then what?
So you actually aren't supposed to spend a lot of time checking your email and answering them. Instead, you should focus on the things that you actually have to get done that day. So just when you get in, quickly go through your email inbox just to scan for red flags. Don't get sucked into answering about that invite and can you do this, can you do that. Really just check it really quickly to see, is there anything that's going to change what my frog is for the day? Is there anything that I need to know that will affect my goals for the day? And then just keep going. And, you know, Julie Morgenstein from the Huffington Post, there's really little that can't get done in 59 minutes. So just wait those 59 minutes, do what you have to do first, and then jump in.
Now, this is for me, this is where the day goes south, because I invariably do skip emails and then forget about them by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, and then I'm in trouble. So that's something you remind yourself you have to go back to. And that goes back to the next thing, which is to have a to-do list, which is something I don't think I've ever had. It's a to-do list.
Oh, no, I live by my to-do list. It's so helpful. And one thing that you should do with your to-do list is order it, of course, in terms of like what's the most important, what's the least important, and then break it down into break the big tasks into little things that you can do to accomplish it so you're less overwhelmed. And one of the hard things about a to-do list is deciding, okay, well, what makes a task more important than this one? Why is getting this done more important than another task? And so Laura Vanderkam told Fast Company that you should ask five questions. Does it take a step toward a big professional goal? Does your boss say it's a top priority? Does it make money? Does it lighten your mental load? And can it only be done today? So that will help you prioritize those top five.
And when do you normally do your to-do list? It seems like, I mean, those are some pretty heavy things to be thinking about at first thing in the morning. Is this something that you put together the night before, or do you do it a couple days in advance?
You know, for the article, we said that you should do it first thing in the morning. But if you really want to get a jump start in your morning, I would definitely recommend doing it the night before. So right before you leave work, set up that to-do list for the next day. And then, you know, you've checked one thing off and you're ready to go.
And there are a lot of neat tech apps. We won't get into those, but there's a lot of things that can help make this part of the list a lot easier. And finally, number four.
Check in with your team. It's small, but say hi to your coworkers. it's going to make you feel happier. It's going to make them feel happier. And also say that you need something from them later in the day. They're going to remember that you said hi in the morning.
This is one of the areas where I have a lot of trouble because I've, you know, one of my previous jobs, they called me grumpy because, you know, when you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you come in, you're not necessarily the happiest of people. You don't smile and, you know, but Grumpelstiltskin is something that you write about in your, I like that better than grumpy because it sort of adds a little cartoonish nature to it. But this is something that if you do have a grumpy attitude, it could affect your negative, it'd be negative on your future, couldn't it?
Definitely. Plus, people want to work with nice people. You know, I think the best advice I've gotten from my dad, although he's given me a lot of great advice, is, you know, work hard and be nice. That's all you have to do. Do your best and be nice to people.
And smile a lot, too. So we're going to try some of these things. I'm going to actually personally try some of these, and maybe we can check back in with you and see how it goes. But we can find more of your work. This story on fastcompany.com. We're going to link to you on Twitter as well. You can find Alana at Alana, E-L-A-N-A, Lynn, L-Y-N, on Twitter. Alana Lynn Gross, thanks for being with us in the opening bell this morning.
Thank you. And I also have a career advice and lifestyle blog. If you guys want more career tips from me, definitely check it out.
Well, we will. And hopefully we can have you back on the show to talk more about that.
I'd love that. That'd be so much fun.
Have a great weekend.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:48 on The Opening Bell from the WGN Market Desk this morning. The global stock market's generally on holiday today. The only market active overnight was the Nikkei in Japan, and it finished down about 110 points up. The Hang Seng was off, and the Shanghai up as well. U.S. stock market is closed until Monday. European stocks actually will be closed on Monday as well. Let's get a look at what happened on the commodities market yesterday. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, and it's a quiet day in world markets and in U.S. markets because most markets are closed in observance of Good Friday. But there is one unusual agricultural event in this country today because the last Friday of March is always the day to issue the quarterly pig crop report. The Department of Agriculture will do that today. They'll do it earlier than they normally do. The report, the pig crop count for the U.S., will be issued at 11 a.m. Chicago time, but of course, will not be able to trade because markets are closed. Yesterday, live cattle futures finally ended a five-day losing streak, and the April live cattle contract gained 52 cents, while the April feeder cattle contract gained 40 cents. In the grain market, a fairly quiet day. Not much trade, of course, yesterday because nobody wants to change positions going into a long three-day holiday weekend. Have a blessed Easter. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Of course, some are calling it the bunny market, so apparently that fell over onto the commodities market as well yesterday. Up next here on the opening bell, we're going to talk about cars, millennials and cars. But first, from the New York Auto Show, Mazda Motor Corporation's MX-5 sports car, known as the Roadster in Japan, won the 2016 World Car of the Year at the New York Auto Show, International Auto Show. The big show is ongoing, about to wrap up there. Joining us on the opening bell this morning to talk about SUVs and millennials is Eric Merkel. He's with Ford. He's a Ford sales analyst. He's been watching the trends. And Eric, good morning. First, welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you for having me, Steve. Good morning.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Are you at the New York Auto Show?
I am not. I did not make it out there this year, but a lot of good stuff happening out there, I know.
Yeah, and Ford and Lincoln has quite a big showing as well. The Lincoln Navigator, that was a pretty big one. But you're talking about SUVs this morning, and the trend that we've been seeing is millennials are buying them, especially the Ford Explorer. Why is this?
Well, it's fascinating as we start to look at the data. Some people, what they know about millennials today is about 10 years dated. So millennials are 10 years older than they were 10 years ago. Imagine that, huh? But as they begin to age, and the oldest of them now are about 35 years of age, one of the things that we noticed with the older 25 to 34-year-old millennials is that they are buying our best-selling SUV with this age cohort is the Ford Explorer, which makes some people scratch their head a little bit because everybody thinks, well, millennials aren't going to buy cars. They're living in these urban areas downtown. But that's starting to change. There was a survey done by the National Association of Realtors recently, which puts millennials, their first, the median age for first-time home ownership is 30. But guess where they're buying these homes? They're not buying them in, the urban areas because, quite frankly, you know, space is a premium and it's expensive. So as they start to have children, they're moving out to the suburbs. They're looking for their first home. And guess what they're needing? They're needing more room in their living quarters, but they're also needing more room in the vehicles that they purchase because these children take up space. Believe me, I know. I've been there before. And they're selecting overwhelmingly the Ford Explorer.
It's interesting because the, you know, the Ford Explorer that some people who are maybe above 34 years old in their 40s might remember wasn't, I don't mean to be insulting here, but it wasn't, you couldn't ring a bell. I mean, it was just sort of blah. But the new Ford Explorer, it's pretty souped up for, I don't want to say souped up, but it's got a lot of bells and whistles that the old version of it didn't have. Is that maybe what's attracting these younger audiences?
Well, sure. It has a very upscale appearance to the vehicle. The proportions are really good. So they not only like the utility that they get with the vehicle, but they like the way it looks while they're driving it as well. And the Explorer has changed so much. It's lighter today. A V6 engine replaces the V8 from yesterday. And an I4 inline four, twin turbo inline four, replaces the V6 from yesterday. So our EcoBoost engines have gotten, you know, the engines have become smaller and they become turbocharged. So it gives them the performance that they're looking for, but also fuel economy as well.
And we want to put in a plug because we, at the beginning of the Chicago Auto Show, where you debuted the Ford Explorer that is one of the first disability-equipped SUVs, which surprised me at the time that there weren't others, but that is the Ford Explorer. And the other thing, too, is these are being built, some of them at least, in the Chicago area, aren't they?
Well, they all are. Actually, now globally, we do have some plants. I believe there's one in Russia, but we've got a couple plants around the world. But the main focus of our production is certainly here in Chicago. And a lot of that not only is for here in the U.S., but it gets exported around the world.
Go ahead.
Explorer is here is the best-selling midsize SUV here in America, and it's doing really well in other parts of the globe, too.
The thing that you mentioned earlier that I think might have gone over people's heads or might have missed, these are fuel-efficient Ford Explorers.
Right, because what we've done, I mean, the SUV has evolved so much over the last 15 years. So 15 years ago, we saw the SUV was about, overall, was about 20% of the industry. In 14, it was about a third of the industry. This last year, in 2015, it got up to about 36% of the industry. So it's been a steady climb for the SUV. However, what's happened is the SUV has evolved dramatically over that period of time where they become lighter. The engine displacement has been reduced, so they're smaller engines, much more efficient, but they're turbocharged, so they really give people that punch when they're trying to get on the expressway, you know, the type of performance that people expect.
And they must be affordable if the younger folks are buying them because, you know, they don't have a lot of expendable extra cash.
Well, it's a great value for the money. It's a great value. So what you're looking at is a lot of the young people, though, what they're really looking at is they like the Explorer Sport. Which it's a higher end Explorer, but it's definitely got more of a slant towards performance.
Eric, good of you to be with us on the opening bell this morning. We'd like to have you back. Perhaps we could talk more about Ford and the future of cars and autos, and we appreciate your insight on this.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. We really enjoy it, and I really appreciate the time. And we love the fact that Explorer is made in Chicago.
Yeah, we do too. If hopefully they have the day off today, but when they head to work tomorrow, our hats off to all the people at the big Ford plant here in Chicago. Eric Merkel is a Ford sales analyst. You can find him on Twitter at Eric @ERICH_Merkel @MERKLE from Ford, talking about the new Ford Explorer. That's the opening bell for today. Have a wonderful Easter weekend. The Steve Cochran Show is coming up next. Thanks to our producer this week, Bennett Wakenight. Our engineer this morning, Bob Ferguson. Mary Sandberg, our executive producer on vacation. Hopefully she'll be back next week. We'll certainly hope she decides to come back from vacation. But have a wonderful day, a great weekend. Again, Steve Cochran next. I'm Steve Grzanich. It's 557.